Mary Burrell's 1919 one-act, John Thornton, a young black soldier who has served his country in World War I, comes home to rural South Carolina. His homecoming is disrupted when he learns that someone close to him has been lynched by a white mob. Again, that's Aftermath, produced by Triangle Productions, November 28th at 7 p.m. at The Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Be sure that you're tuned in to KBOO Community Radio just before midnight on Thursday, November 17th for a very special celebration of Hip Hop History Month. We'll be dropping a 3-hour block of old school beats from back in the day. Again, tune in just before midnight on Thursday, November 17th for a celebration of Hip Hop History Month right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is John Schock, host of Progressive Spirit. What is listening?
Listening, for me, is an act of love. That's surrounding people with a total kind of acceptance, and that helps them grow and come alive and be healthier and relax and do what they can do.
Jim Peterson is my guest, the author of Why Don't We Listen Better? Communicating and Connecting in Relationships. Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Today, I will have the privilege of talking to Ibram Mubarak about Right to Survive and the City Council's promise to move this rest area from their current location in Old Town to a new location. And knowing that we are running minus on minutes with this administration, with the mayor leaving, my opportunity today to talk to Ibram about where are we in that process since the first piece of land that was being developed is no longer, did not pass a review for the permitting process. And so Ibram is on his way, and we're going to have that conversation very soon. Most of us know that nowadays it takes a little bit longer to get anywhere in the city of Portland because we go 20 miles an hour on the freeway. That's going to be our conversation today, and I want to tell you a little bit about Ibram. Ibram, actually, I met him about 15 years ago when he started Dignity Village. Was it 15 years ago? How long ago was it?
Well, Dignity Village has been going for 18, but I met you about 16 years ago.
Okay.
It was going 2 years into the form when we ran across each other's path.
Wow, man.
Or walked.
And we both look a lot younger than we did back then.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah.
Still look young.
Yeah, well.
I'm joking. You
some
look
days
young.
We feel joking. Younger than yeah, others, yeah. That's for sure. I want to shut the door. And so, Ibram, we want to talk about the last time you were on the program, we discussed that the city council had a plan to actually provide resources to identify a location and provide resources to assist Right to Survive to relocate your rest area. And that process started well over a year ago. And the mayor is on his way out. So my question is, where are we in that process?
Well, due to the present situation.
What present situation?
For people who voted for Trump or not, we need to come together and take all this
nonsense and build this country back to way it should be, where no boundaries and everybody's allowed to live free. And with saying that, the mayor set some standards with Commissioner Amanda Fritz that Right to Dream 2 can move to a different site. And with that, we got a new mayor coming in, just like we have a new president coming in, and things is going to change. And we haven't moved. We was trying to get to our new location before the new mayor come in, but they say it was a slight oversight on the city officials' part that we was going into the area we was going into was zoned for industrial, and the Luba appealed it and said it was zoned for industrial, not residential. So now it takes about 6 months to get the zoning change, but they haven't even started yet. We still negotiating, and it's like going on 1 month until our 6 months. So now we got 5 months to make that change. And so we're looking for temporary places. But this goes along with people do what they want to do. The city officials do what they want to do. And to me, I don't think it was an oversight. I think that they wasn't aware of the zoning. How can you not be aware of the zoning if you city officials and what's happening to the houseless community?
Well,
so that's where we at now.
So here's what I'm
rezone the area.
Okay, so step by step. So you started this process with the mayor. The mayor identified this site when?
2 years. Two years ago. But we've been looking for sites for about 4 years.
Right.
And so we finally found one. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just trying to get the whole story out, right? Because you know too much, and you're just right. You just jump to the conclusion, but our listeners may not know the history, right?
Right?
So, I believe it was about a year ago that the mayor made an agreement that he was going to put resources into relocating Right to Survive, right?
Well, it's. Yeah, sort of. Kind of, sort of, right.
Well, ain't no kind of, sort of. Wait a minute.
Well, because he ain't putting no resources in.
This is my point. Yeah, I'm just trying to tell the story about how you got from where you are till today and then how we get to the future.
Okay.
So let's start over.
Okay.
So about a year ago, you knew you had to move from your site.
Exactly.
Actually, even go back a little bit before that, right? Because
yes.
Your current site, you were only able to be at that site because the landowner was in a fight with the city of Portland.
Exactly.
Right?
And
could you succinctly say how you got there and what the rent was?
Okay. Well, the landlord, it was an adult bookstore, and it was bringing negative clientele, they say, into the Chinatown, Old Town district. And
right.
So they had him tear the building down, and ever since he tore his business down, he was trying to create new business for himself to sustain his life so he won't be houseless.
Right.
And they rejected it, and the last one that he wanted to put food carts on his property. And
right.
I guess, I haven't read it, but they say it's an ordinance where food carts can't be on gravel.
Right.
So when he tried to pave it, they found some a broken old Chinese bowl, which said, oh, this may be some artifacts down here.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to dig 10 feet down at $1,200 a feet. And he said, forget that. So he said, I just give it to that guy who found Digny Village. And voila.
Mm-hmm.
It
and
happened.
When was that?
That was 5 years ago.
That was 5 years
ago. Yeah, and so we did sign have a 5-year commitment with the landowner.
Right.
And long as we didn't cost him any money.
Right.
He was okay with what we did.
Right.
And so the organization Right to Survive was trying to think what to do with that. And so the rest area was always in our mind, but what type of rest area Well, that's what we negotiated. And so they were saying, well, since houseless people can't sit down on the sidewalk or stand in front of stores, right, we're just going to have a place where they can sit, right, and maybe play cards or, right, just put some brushes up where they won't be harassed. And I said, no, a rest there is where somebody rests, right, gets sleep,
right,
because it's a lot of sleep-deprived people walking the streets,
that's,
and
right,
they not can't figure out what to do productively. So they said, okay, we'll try it your way, Ibrahim. Right. We'll get see how it goes with people sleeping. Mm-hmm. And so it went well. Mm-hmm. After 5 years, we had over 400 people,
right,
get housing, over 395 people found work, 18 women were able to keep their babies, 40 people quit drug habits,
mm-hmm,
17 people doing online education in our computer room. Two graduated from college last year, one from PCC and one from PSU.
Nice, nice.
So all because they can get some rest and,
right,
figure out. That's the start.
Excellent. Okay,
and
so
then they want to move us,
right,
because they want to build a youth hostel, international hostel across the street. And one of the persons said, well, nobody's going to pay to come into our hostel if they can go over there and sleep free. So we got to move out that area, and so PDC bought that land where I don't know what they're going to do, probably put a parking lot. You know, people these days rather see cars parked than by humans parked.
Right. Well, okay, so PDC bought the lot.
Yeah.
And they gave you a time certain when you had to be moved from that spot. Right, so that, yeah, they can start whatever the development is.
Exactly.
And so, and that was about a year ago,
yes,
that you started negotiating with the mayor's office with PDC,
yes,
to identify a location.
Exactly.
And they settled on this location where?
Third and Harrison.
Harrison. And now we find that the zoning, so just as you were preparing, right, starting,
yeah,
to put the infrastructure in place.
2 months out of moving.
2 months before the move.
Right.
You're then told that it's not zone appropriately.
Right.
And you have to go through a zone changing process.
Exactly.
Okay, for those who are just joining us, I'm talking with Ibrahim Mubarak, who is the founder of Right to Survive, as well as Dignity Village and lots of services for people who are experiencing houselessness. And we're talking about another failed promise by the Portland City Council, specifically by Mayor Charlie Hales, who promised a year ago that he was going to help identify a location and help you to move and relocate to that location. Now we're 6 weeks from him leaving office. We're told that we need 6 months to actually change the zoning. Who at the city and at PDC is responsible and in charge of this process?
Well, the mayor office is still helping us look for a different location.
Who in the mayor's office? Because they change like every day there's somebody new in the mayor's office. Who specifically are you working with?
Well, it was Rachel Wiggins and Ben. I can't remember his last name. Forgive me, Ben.
Right, it's okay.
So they're helping.
They don't seem to have the same sense of urgency, understanding that it's wintertime.
Right.
And that moving in the wintertime is challenging at best, right?
Exactly.
And we had an expectation that people would have a safe place with amenities.
Right. The amenities was going to be showers,
yes,
running restroom, a laundry facility.
A kitchen,
right, and a meeting room where people can meet and talk and discuss,
right,
how to become better back into productivity,
right,
in the mainstream of this city.
And so I guess my first question is that the right location? Would it work if it worked the way the mayor has promised that it would work?
Well, I mean, the right location, if everybody get inside their own apartment or house, that's the right location.
You know? I'm with you there.
But the right location is really where we at, because we right there in the hub of all the social services and,
right,
stuff. And it's a happen chance place when the shelters are full, people come to Right to Dream too.
Right.
But when Right to Dream too is full, where do the people go?
Right.
And that's why we need other sites like Hazelnut Grove,
right.
Forgotten Rams, Dinkney Village, Camp Amanda, where people can go and get a safe night's rest.
Mm-hmm.
So in that meantime, that Homer Williams and Dyke Danes Development Crew with Don Maserati come up with this plan for Terminal 1,
right.
which they wanted to house 100 people the first 6 months and try to improve it every 6 months to hopefully they get 400 people, where it's going to be on-site social services, mm-hmm. healthcare, food, SSI, apartment readiness, and all that. But they wanted Right to Survive, Right to Dream too, to operate, to be over the operation of
right,
the place,
right.
because our success record in the past 5 years is better than the success record of
right.
social services.
That's right.
And who better can do it than having a peer-led base operation
right.
than Right to Survive and Right to Dream too.
Right.
But the city knocked it down because they say we lack organization and management skills. So I just want to put that out and do a shop and compare and look at all the
dollars we've invested in social service agencies
right.
to help the same population.
Right, to help right. the same population and see where their success went at our low barrier rate. And
right.
I think that's why they don't want us to operate it, because we do it at a way less cheaper form
mm.
than what's happening now. And the public say, why are we paying all this money to these agencies
right.
and nobody's getting productive? And here you got grassroots organization doing it at cheaper price and people are getting productive.
Right.
People are getting housed. People are getting work. People are keeping their babies.
Right.
People are getting off of drugs. People are getting educated.
Right.
So what's the real deal? What's really the reason that they bashing the grassroots organization Right to Survive, Ibrahim Mubarak, you know?
Right, right. If you're just joining the conversation, I'm talking to Ibrahim Mubarak, who is the founder of Right to Survive. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so I guess, have you had conversations with the incoming Mayor Ted Wheeler.
I had conversation with Mayor-elect Ted Wheeler. We met on several occasions, but in his once he got elected, he kind of like threw a curveball, you know, saying
so?
That he don't believe in tent cities or camps.
Hmm.
And after he seen, after he been to all.
He's been to
yeah.
Right to Survive.
Right to Survive, Right to Dream.
Well, you know, he said that the whole time he was running for office, though, that he actually thought that people should be in housing, right?
If he thinks that, let's hold
so
him to his word.
Question.
Put,
exactly.
him, put him in housing. So when he become mayor, he's
right.
going to open up affordable housing. And I say affordable to low to no income people.
Right.
Subsidized housing instead of building all these high-tech condominiums where people can't afford. You know, we got 111 people moving here a day.
Right.
So where are those 111 people moving that losing their apartment? Where do they go?
Right.
And lately, at all my presentations and workshops and lectures and stuff, I've been seeing a flux of middle class white people coming in, and I look at their face, the expression
mm-hmm.
on their face, they are afraid that they're next, so they want to know what to do.
Well, and you know, that's the only reason Portland has declared a housing emergency. It wasn't because poor folks didn't have housing. It was because middle-class white folks were starting to lose their housing.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how the city of Portland operates. that's just real, right? So what's next? Right now, what are you, just in a holding pattern?
Well, we still trying to negotiate and seeing that we can rescind the Luba appeal and see if we can go over there and they can get that change. But in the meantime, we looking for a temporary site, and I'm trying to tell them, if it took them over 2 years to find this site,
yes,
how long is it going to take them to find a temporary site?
Right.
So
well,
we will not be disbanded. That,
right.
That's the thing right there. We will not disband Right to Dream 2. We will not forget the houseless community.
Right.
We're going to fight. And if anybody know me, I'm a fighter.
Well, here's my question. So if PDC bought the property.
Right.
Then that means it's a city-owned property, and that means that whatever it is they have planned for that property, if they haven't fulfilled their promise to your constituents, then they don't get to like do their development until they fulfill that promise, don't you think?
And that's where we had a Mexican standoff. No tenth purpose, no discrimination,
right.
No tenth purpose. It's just that everybody understand that we had nose to nose with each other, saying, well, you knew this, you knew we're a legit entity, we
right.
knew that we're successful, organized, legit
yes.
entity, and so you want to disband us to, so people can go to your traditional shelters,
right.
which haven't been working for the past 20 years because y'all ain't keep up with the time. These houseless people is not your grandfather houseless people. This is a new type of houseless people. People losing their houses because of the economic system, not because they're, what you say, they're lazy, they
right.
bums, they this and that.
Right.
It's because of affordability and a change in our economic system.
Absolutely true. We're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, James. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'd like to open up the conversation and I guess talk about things in a different way that doesn't demonize property owners and doesn't glorify what KBOO and your guests like to call the houseless community. That that the problem is a lot more complex than it's presented kind of routinely on KBOO. That property owners are tired of paying higher and higher property taxes, and yet seeing these camps in the city that don't reflect the kind of community standards that Ibrahim talks about. I mean, the majority of people's interactions, of all citizens' interactions with this community, are people who don't seem to care about anyone else but themselves. They don't care about even the place where they're living. You drive by, or you walk by, or you ride your bike by, and you have to avoid excrement, puddles of urine, bags of garbage, people who have no sense of community whatsoever. And yet, all we hear or seem to hear on KBOO is this talk about the houseless community. And I think it's more than just that. I think there's a whole other part of the story on both sides. I mean, there's a whole part of the houseless community that is irresponsible and is not community oriented. And there's a whole side of the property owner community that doesn't... It lacks compassion and lacks a solution or even a desire to find a solution.
So can I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
I appreciate your call, first off. And so I think that we actually agree more than we disagree, and I'm just going to check myself in that process because I don't want to make assumptions.
Sure.
So I think that you and I can agree that we have a housing crisis.
Yes.
I think you and I can agree that that there are a variety of reasons of how people end up being houseless.
Yes.
Right? I think we can agree that some might be personal responsibility, but some, and primarily what I see, are the loss of a job, a health issue. I mean, just something happens, right? Because most people are kind of living on that edge, and something unexpected happens, and all of a sudden, they find themselves houseless.
Uh-huh.
Can we agree on that?
Yes.
Can we also agree that we have landlords in this state that are, I mean, in the city, that are trying to make as much money as they possibly can because they understand that these new apartment complexes are charging an arm and a leg, and they want a piece of that pie.
Absolutely.
And so can we also agree that Right to Survive is a unique experiment that started 5 years ago and has never had one call from the police? I got that from the mayor, so, and the police chief. And so there's a difference between an organized space with rules and leadership and then just people with a tent or sleeping bag pulled up somewhere.
That's where the problem arises.
Oh, wait, I just want to see if we agree on this first, right? Can you agree that...
Yeah, I agree that there are some unique and very beneficial aspects to Right to Survive.
Okay, and so right there, I think you and I agree on at least five or six issues, right?
But you chose, so...
Right. Well, I mean, but I chose them because I listened carefully to what you were saying, and you don't sound to me like a man without empathy.
No.
You don't sound to me like a man who isn't aware that we have a crisis on our street, right?
But what I sort of have problem with is hearing, and I hear it a lot on cable, is that Right to Survive and Ibrahim's programs are the voice of a community.
Well, it is a voice of a community.
Just like I've just heard Ibrahim talk about developers and property owners as, you know, the problem, and that there's another side to that story, and there's another side to the houseless or homeless community as well that is not being taken care of, that is not being addressed by cable and by Right to Survive. That there is the vast majority. I would say the vast majority of interactions between the housed community and the houseless community is unpleasant. Because the majority of people who are living on the streets are not organized. They don't have the values that Ibrahim expresses. And to claim that he is the voice of that whole community or that whole population, I think it distorts the conversation.
Saying that
all developers and all property owners and all government is wrong in how they've tried to handle this situation.
I never said that.
I was just going to say that, Ibram. I've never heard Ibram identify himself as the spokesperson for the entire houseless community.
No,
right?
I think he's, at least through Kidu, elevated to that sort of status. He's the one you go to when you want to talk about homeless issues. You go to him, and he may have some solutions, but there's a lot more issues out there that Right to Survive is not solving or is not addressing. I still go to work. I ride my bike to work, and I still have to avoid puddles of urine and piles of feces on my way to work. And yet my taxes keep going up.
And so my question is that a flaw of the work that Ibram's doing, or is that the flaw of your elected leaders who you are continuing to pay more tax dollars to and you're getting less services?
Well, I don't know, but I guess my point is that I think to come to more things that we agree on, I think we have to stop sort of pigeonholing people, pigeonholing property owners, pigeonholing the government, the city government, pigeonholing Right to Survive, and pigeonholing the houseless community. I think that it's way more nuanced, and it just feels that there's not a voice of for example, property owners who, like myself, who come across these, horrible situations in our community, and yet we hear, when we listen to the radio to hear, where they're coming from, who's their spokesperson, or where the issues lie on that side, We don't hear that.
And so here's what I'm going to do, because I'm going to wrap this up. Sure. I wanted to give you an opportunity to really state your case, because again, I really believe, based on this conversation, that you care. You care about what's happening in this community. You care about the fact that our houses population is actually increasing almost daily. And I will say that KBOO is pretty much the only place that you hear directly from the houseless community. So it may seem slanted because on Cape, that's the only place. I don't hear on OPB. I don't hear on Lars Lawson.
Let's hear from the people on Southeast Division who live under the 99 Bridge and, you know, routinely have bonfires and throw garbage everywhere and trash and a green bioswale.
Let me just end this conversation by saying this. You know, wait, sir. Hello, sir.
Yeah.
You know, I know that every nook and cranny in this city after dark has people looking for shelter. Every nook and cranny, every highway, every overpass, every open space, and it's only getting worse and worse.
But compassion alone is not going to solve that problem.
You're right. Compassion alone is not going to solve that problem. But the inaction of our elected leaders, I think your anger is misdirected. I think that we have a new city council member who understands this issue passionately, Coley Udale, and she wants rent control. She wants affordable housing. She wants to make sure that there are nobody living on the street, but she's only one city council member. We've had a mayor talking about a houseless emergency and has done pretty much nothing since he made that pronouncement, and now he's extended it for another year, right? Voters just passed the most expensive affordable housing bond measure on the planet, right, to build 1,300 units, and what we need is 15,000 units. And so I think your anger is misplaced. I think people like you, property owners, need to be putting pressure on the city council to actually do their job and fix this. And so I appreciate your call. I'd love to talk to you more. I'm glad you called and weighed in, because we do need to hear from property owners. We do need to hear from people who are not experiencing homelessness. But we also have to realize that the problem lies right downtown at City Hall, because the people that are making decisions, the people that are issuing those permits, they know we have a housing problem, but they haven't fixed it. And so I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Thank you.
Can I say
And Ibram, that? Yes, now I know I was holding you back because I could see the steam coming out of your ears.
My horns just, going up.
Yes, and I just didn't want it to turn into a you and him, right? Because it really wasn't about you. It was really about his perception of what he's seeing out on the street. So, yes.
I never said that I was the voice of the houseless community.
I never heard you say that.
It's just that I have a unique time in the houseless community, and I go into places where social service agencies and people don't go, and people trust me. So when I become aware of things, and I put them out. But this is something that I want to draw a picture. First of all, we all live in houses. Let's say we all live in houses.
Right.
You're my neighbor.
Right.
You know, our kids grew up together. I like your new Ford. I like your little Chihuahua, whatever. Right. And then I lose my housing.
Right.
So now I'm the enemy. Right. But I'm that same person that I was when I was in house. But because I don't have housing, that means it seems I don't have no rights. There's no public restrooms.
Right.
There's no place where I can throw my waste.
Right.
There's no place where I can stay warm.
Right.
So I may have to create a bonfire. Nobody educate us on how to live on the street. They educate us how to be doctors, teachers, ball players, dog catchers, or clean up the streets, anything. But nobody know how to live on the street.
Right.
So when people come to the streets, they mind the discombobulated, and they bring this Grecian myth that this is the way they have to be.
Right.
Now when people are getting frustrated and tired because they don't have public restrooms, they don't have public space, they don't have trash bins, then that's what you're going to see is trash. I asked the people that live in houses, how would your property look if you didn't have garbage service,
right. If
you didn't have running bathroom, if you didn't have showers to stay clean, if you didn't have a place to wash your clothes,
right. How
would you be? How would you feel
when
all these negative things is coming to you, when this great American concept been dictated to us since we was in kindergarten? This is the way life is going to be if we patronize this country.
Right.
So you do see a lot of frustration. You do see a lot of anger.
Right.
You do see a lot of mismanagement of themselves. Because they don't have the tools or the means to manage themselves the way they were when they was in-house.
And so, I mean, here's another great example. I just think that government just goes out of their way to complicate things that should be really, really simple, right?
Right.
Like the DA's office is trying to develop this new LEAD program, LEAD, right, that's supposed to not connect people to the criminal justice system. But it starts with police officers on the street doing an assessment about whether somebody needs alcohol or drug treatment, housing, or blah, blah, blah. And so rather than charging them with a crime because they've been caught with drugs, they are supposed to then support them in going through some community services.
Right.
I said to Rod Underhill, well, why would you not hire houseless people to go out and do the interview, the assessment of what people need, because they will have much more credibility.
Exactly.
The people will be much more honest with them than they're going to be to a uniformed cop coming up questioning them with the threat of arresting them or taking them to jail. Nobody thinks an officer walks up who is officer friendly, right?
Not no more.
Especially if you're a houseless person.
Right.
And so, again, it's like these government agencies go behind closed doors. They talk among themselves. They come up with plans. And just last night, they presented this plan to the public. I wasn't at that meeting because I was at another meeting because there's always meetings happening. But the logic just escapes me, right? And it's being, touted as, it's going to reduce criminal prosecution, blah, blah. I haven't seen anything in this program that tells me that people on the street are going to be receptive to a police officer saying to them, this isn't about crime, this is about us getting you services, right?
Never.
I'm just here to support you, right?
Never.
I'm from the government.
Never.
And I'm here to help.
Right.
We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Stacy. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not actually in Portland. I'm in Salem. I have been there and understand the situation. I just have a couple of comments. Understanding why we're not more promoting the cities that have housed the homeless people and cost less money in the long run. But what I do know is that behind those closed doors, when they're having these meetings, they're sending a lot of those people that are giving this bad reputation to all of the people of Portland, because the people of Portland do care about the situation. But with these people behaving like that, it's given a bad reputation all around. And I can tell you that the police have sent a whole lot of those people to make it look bad for the homeless people. So that's what really going on.
I agree with you, Stacy.
I'll take the comments off the air because I'm borrowing someone else's phone. So
okay.
Thank you, Stacy.
Okay.
Loving you.
It's good.
Loving you. Have a good day.
It's good and bad and everything. Mm-hmm. But what people like to do is see the negativity of what the bad of what the houseless community. But you never hear like James say something productive on what houseless people are doing.
Right.
Now I can do the same thing and say what people that live in houses doing.
There's
no meth lab.
Right.
We're not kidnapping people. We're not killing each other's grandmother and stuff up. That was on the news and that's in house.
Right.
And during the protest, those wasn't houseless people.
Right.
Right.
That's breaking windows and stuff. So who should be afraid of who? This is a very trying time where people are on an edge.
Yes.
People are confused. People yes. are afraid. And when people are confused and afraid, they pick on the lowest marginalized people possibly. So the houseless community is mm-hmm. under attack. People got their tents burnt up. People got attacked while they were asleep. And so you don't read, you don't see this on the news. You don't hear about this on Channel 12, 6, 2, or 8. But we know about this. So that's why we speaking up. And that's why we showing our frustration. When a houseless woman get taken advantage of, the police question her character. Mm-hmm. When a house woman get taken advantage of, the National Guards come out. So I don't want to do tit for tat. I just want to come up. We know there's a problem. We have some, in the meantime, solutions, and we know what's best for us.
And just like the housed community right. is not monolithic, the unhoused community is not monolithic.
Exactly.
Right? There are a lot of voices, there are a lot of people, and there are a lot of different circumstances, and we can't paint either community with one broad brush, right?
Exactly.
I want to let folks know what's coming up today on the Boo. At 9, hear a presentation, what it's like to be on the front lines of housing justice by recently elected Portland City Council, City Council elect Coley Udale.
Yay.
And Margaret Black of Portland, Black of Portland Tenants United. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Para asks, should Donald Trump engage with Russia to promote global peace, or is he simply Putin's stooge? At 10 is Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoint host David Bernstein continues a week of broadcasting from Standing Rock and call from Canadian Indigenous activists to hold Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to his promises. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman talks to author Tehiba Jess, whose book Oli presents a musical history of the long fight against slavery and a subversive account of how Black musicians have been exploited. As always, we want to thank our KBOO members for their generous support. And if you're not a member, it's real easy to become one. Go online to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. It's that simple. And let's see, not next week. Next week is Thanksgiving. I'll be gone. The week after, we have a short winter membership drive, so that might be a great time to either become a member or up your membership. We're going to go back to the phone lines. Good morning, Linda. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
And hi, Ibrahim. I wanted to, I live in inner southeast, and I go down 10th and 11th and 12th streets that have many, many people with tents, and also down MLK as it's turning into McLaughlin. I also have a friend who lives in a camp that's up over by Overlook, which is a very well-organized camp that cares about safety mm-hmm. and has made a gathering place for people, helps people build safer, warmer places to live, has community meetings, et cetera. So a good example. But in my observation, it's like 8-2 or 9-1. Are people keeping their tents in order, attempting to keep their belongings in order with various kinds of carts and other things? And when you think about no bathrooms,
right.
no garbage collection, no transportation, none of the services that would allow you to stay clean and neat, and still you will see these tents well kept up. I think it would be so easy for this city to have a program where they went around one day putting out garbage bags for people, because who can afford $10 to buy hefty bags, by
right.
the way?
That's right.
So, put out bags for people, and the next day have the garbage things come by and pick up people's garbage.
Right.
If they can make our streets cleaner. It would make way more humane.
That's right.
And let's see some more porta potties on the streets. If we're not going to build real bathrooms, let's put porta potties. But we need to be responsible for our own streets and for the people who live on them. These would be simple solutions if we care.
Right. And since we can use inmate crews to come and take houseless people's stuff, we could certainly use inmate crews to come and bring the plastic bags and then come back and collect the garbage, right? We and talk about a really inhumane thing to do.
because those inmates know when they get out, they're going to be looking for a campsite because they're not going to be able to afford to get into any housing, because we don't think that's part of bringing people back to the community from being incarcerated. So thank
and
you.
I'd like to see every community center in the city open itself to free showers for people
exactly.
who want to come in
thank
and clean.
You.
And have donated toiletry packages there. People are generous. They will donate the toiletries.
Yes, they
and
will.
And just allow people. They used to shuffle them out.
Right.
Not allow them to come in and use the showers that are right there being paid for with my tax dollars.
Right. Right. So it's amazing.
That could immediately make a difference in the livability for the people on the streets, but also for the city as a whole.
Very simple.
And make people feel charitable.
Simple idea. Wouldn't cost any additional money. You could even open it up early before the general population came and have a couple of hours that you would just let people who needed to come in and shower and clean up and
yes,
get a exactly. cup of coffee,
well,
something warm.
Center, you know, it'd be 400,000 people through those doors. Let's give them a few more.
And, exactly.
And I mean, it's a good center. I'm just thinking of the one near Overlook. But, you know, we have these community centers, and, you know, YWs and stuff could offer to do the same. Let's look at being generous. Let's look at trying to help our fellow human beings. I couldn't last 2 weeks on that street, and I know that from my own health.
You and me both. And let me just say that I would talk to city council-elect Coley Ulule, because I think that you and her are singing from the same page in the hymnal.
Oh, well, thank you. I will try to talk to her.
Yes, because I think that that's what we need, are people who are thinking outside of the box. How do we deal with today's emergency and then prepare for tomorrow? And you've got some fabulous ideas, and both of yours wouldn't cost us any more money and would be humane approaches to actually the reality of human functions. I mean, you know, all of us go to the bathroom, no matter how cute you think
to be
we are.
Dirty.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what Right to Survive, Right to Dream to do. We fight for human, constitutional, civil rights.
Right.
And people at Hazelnut Grove, Forgotten Rams, Dignity Village, and Right to Dream too has been bringing these in the meantime, solutions to the city officials, and we even made proposal that it was a place on in between 9th and 10th and Burnside, the park blocks, that maybe the city or a developer can reconstruct that and turn us into pay to shower a quarter every 3 minutes to shower or something, but they turn into food carts. So, you know,
it's about making money.
It's about making money. Exactly. Yeah. And I feel for the property owners too. I mean, we in a fragile situation. I understand that they pay to live there and their property is being damaged, but also we need to come together to fight for this. You know it's a problem. We know it's a problem. Let's not throw negative spirits at each other. Let's come and reason with one another and go to our city electorate. That's what we elect them for when these problems arrive. You have to listen to the people, not just the people who live inside houses, but you should listen to mainly the people that live in the streets, because we see and hear everything.
Just so you know. Thank you for...
Unfortunately, in the middle of the night when you would like to be asleep.
That's right.
Maybe you're too cold to be able to be.
Exactly.
Well, thank you guys for the show. I'll get off now and let the rest of it go on.
But, thank you.
I will bring my ideas to city council.
Yes. They need to hear many ideas that are outside of the box. I just think that our current city council they can't think beyond what they've always done. And so it's going to be a breath of fresh air to have some new blood who isn't tied into old thinking to really think about what do we do now?
Exactly.
What do we do immediately?
Well, I just don't want to look at the situation as disgusting when they see some particular debris, as opposed to how did someone get here?
Right.
What can I do to change that? Let's have the helping hand out there instead of the punishing pointed finger.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, what difference it would make to actually provide some garbage bags, as an example, right? Here.
Yeah.
No, and I'll come back and get them later, right? And take them and dump them. I mean, we could be a lot more humane to each other, and I think that's really the message. Thank you so much for your call.
We also have a lot of abandoned elementary schools. that they can utilize for showers and restrooms and right. community centers where people can come in and talk and stay warm and stay off the streets and you don't have to worry about them loitering. We also have a lot of, as the young lady said, we put all the houses, if we fill all the people's houses with people, you'll have way less people on the streets. If you help the veterans get off the streets, right. if you help foster care in a better screen that and manage that a better way, you have less runaways that's right. living on the streets. If you keep affordability, right. you'll have less families on the streets. Right. And all of this is promoting houselessness, and people on the inside don't know. So, of course, KBOO is going to address the situation, the problem that's affecting this community, that's right. affecting our city, that's affecting our state. That's what KBOO do, bring the real news to you all that you all don't hear or know or see.
We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Rachel. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. I actually called a little bit earlier when someone called, and it got me going. I just, to share my story a little bit, I'm 25 years old. I make $16 an hour. I went through school and did all the proper things to, you know, get your life going or whatever. But I had to move back in with my parents. My mother's disabled. My father needed help. And I also can't afford to live on my own anymore. And it makes me really angry when these people call in thinking that there's just suddenly this influx of delinquent people that haven't, you know, that are on drugs or just alcoholics or aren't even trying. And it's like, if I didn't have my father, and also if he didn't have me, we would be homeless.
Yes.
You know, and I think that anyone who's housed needs to pay attention to the fact that, you know, you may have a house now, but what is your child going to have in the future? Like, things need to change now, or if your kid's going to be that one in the street that everyone's calling delinquent when they just tried their hardest,
right?
You know, to do what they were supposed to do.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you calling back. I can just hear the passion in your voice. And maybe a little bit of anger underneath, because they just don't know, right? They just don't know what they don't know. I appreciate you. Thank you very much. And your story is not atypical of your demographic group. In fact, when I talk to college students today, I congratulate them. You're the first generation in the history of America that we have no expectations that you'll do better than your parents, right? Right? I mean, how, right? It's like there's no expectation because, you know, it's a totally different environment. And most kids graduate, if they're fortunate enough to go to college, they graduate with so much debt that they can't own a home in their lifetime.
Yes.
So they will be lifelong renters, but they'll be paying back that student loan for the rest of their days.
Right. And how many?
And that's the point I'm at. And even if, like, my father has a house, but it's not paid off.
Right.
And if he were to pass away, I can't afford that. Mm. So, you know.
Yes.
I think it's really important. People need to pay attention that it's something needs to change in the system.
Absolutely.
And it's going to begin affecting your family soon, too.
Exactly.
Right. Well, and that's why we have a housing emergency. Exactly. Thank you so much. Appreciate you calling back.
And then let me make 2 points. There's a lot of houseless school children, college people, living on the streets.
A lot of what?
Houseless.
Oh, college students?
Yeah, students, right. School children.
Yes.
And my father in Chicago, Illinois, he was an alderman in Harvey, Illinois, and ran for mayor.
Right.
And when he died, my parents' house was paid for 10 years before he died. And my mother developed a stroke. And they was going to take her house.
Right.
And so I went there and started looking over her bills and got my brother and sister. And we found out that she had money set aside to pay for a property tax, but didn't nobody know. So her property tax wasn't being paid.
Ah.
So to the house owner, no matter if your house is bought and paid for, if you don't pay your property tax, they can come in and take your house, and you'll be houseless.
That's right. Absolutely true.
You got to continue that.
Right.
But the one thing I want to tell you, folks, is the houseless people are not the problem. The problem is the problem.
Right. Amen to that. Okay, we're gonna do a, like, we got a few callers all stacked up there. Hello, Mitch. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Thank you, and I appreciate especially you hearing out the gentleman who had a point of view where he thought only one side was being represented on KBOO. I thought it was the sort of conversation we need more of.
Well, thank you.
And it reminded me that I was listening over the summer, and I was actually, one slight correction, Joanne, is not that there hasn't been people from the housed community who were also being leaned on that didn't have a voice, because this summer there was extraordinary programming by both KBOO and, for the first time, OPB sent reporters to the Johnson Creek Hooverville, where under the summer waiver that Mayor Hales granted the homeless, a huge tent city had grown up, and people were actually talking to the people stuck living, you know, houseless.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first time I heard that perspective come together. But now this morning, the gentleman, and you very rightfully said, if you are paying higher property taxes for living in the city and you have to bicycle through human excrement, why aren't you putting pressure on your political leaders?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard the name Dan Saltzman, because for the last decade, that's his portfolio. He's the Minister of Housing in the city of Portland.
Yes.
Now, I would like to ask you, could people at KBOO have a policy of each time they ask such a person in a key position to come on and enter into this sort of dialogue as you entered into with the housed person today, as over the summer when you had the editor of the community newspapers dealing with homeowner frustrations because a lot of the houseless communities didn't have it together the way Ibrahim's community has it together. Why not each time you ask a city council member like Dan Saltzman, whose responsibility it's been for 10 years and whose outcomes have been disastrous in providing affordable housing, wouldn't it be helpful for listeners to hear, once again, we've asked a council member, Dan Saltzman, to come on to KBOO and discuss this on community radio, and he did not make himself available. If we heard that day in, day out, I don't think he'd keep getting reelected.
I think that you make a very valid point, and I certainly haven't asked him to come on in a while. And primarily, I will just say, I normally don't ask politicians to come on because I don't like the political spin that they try to do when they're on radio. But because of this conversation, I will be giving him an invite before the end of the year, and I'll let you know.
Thank you.
You're
Can
very
I get
welcome.
One more thing in?
I tell you, we're running out of time. I've got to get one more caller in before we hang up. Have a great day. You're going to have to catch me next week or the week after.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry, who was that?
Anna?
Hi, Anna. Welcome to KBOO. We've got about a minute.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that I was listening to the radio today, this morning, the program that's on. And I wanted to say that I had a homeless child who was on the street for lots of reasons. And the thing about Portland that really upset me was that there was nothing that she could do in order to put her stuff places, to be able to take showers, to find a job,
right,
to do any of that. And, you know, it really breaks my heart. I'm a housed person. And having that fortune, it really irritates me the way the city has managed to allow these big developers to come in and tear our city apart,
yes,
in order for
Thank
them to make
you.
Tons of money,
yes,
and to make it so that my children, and I have two other children, cannot afford to live in the city.
That's right.
Cannot afford to be close to their parents.
Right.
Even if they have decent jobs, they can't afford to be here anymore, and it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart to see the homeless out there who can't find a place to sleep.
Yes.
Who can't find a place to eat or find anything that can support them. And I'm outraged. I'm just outraged.
I share your outrage. Thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we got you in. And we are just about out of time, but I want to remind people that this is not a houseless problem. This is a community problem. And collectively, we have to do much better than we've done. It didn't go unnoticed for me today leaving my house, just how cold it is already. And we haven't even hit Thanksgiving yet. And so it is my hope that people will up the pressure on the Portland City Council, especially Housing Commissioner Dan Salzman, especially the mayor, who's made promises over and over and over again about his commitment to the houseless community and actually helping with the relocation. You know, he's going to say that for the next 6 weeks, and then he's gone.
Exactly. And during this time of holiday season and giving, we must be aware that this is the season where you have more suicide and death rates in a houseless community because of depression,
right?
Because we can't be with our loved one, because one of our loved ones is taken away or die because of the cold weather. Thank you all for listening, and contact Joanne Hardesty if you want to know more on cable.
Or you can also go to Right to Survive. They have a Facebook and a website. Thank you very much. I'm Joanne Hardesty. It's been a pleasure to be with you. Happy Turkey Day next week. You won't see me, but see you after that. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
KBOO Portland, good morning. It's 8:59. Portland area weather, partly sunny with a high near 51 today. Coming up in just a minute or so, a presentation on what's it like to be on the front lines of housing justice by recently elected Portland City Council member Chloe Udaly and Margot Black of Portland Tenants United. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Pear asks, should Donald Trump engage with Russia to promote global peace, or is he simply Putin's stooge? At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints with host David Bernstein continues a week of broadcasts from Standing Rock, and a call from Canadian Indigenous activists to hold Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to his promises. At 11, on Between the Covers, host David Naiman talks to author Tayahimba Jess, whose book Oleo presents a musical history of the long fight against slavery and a subversive account of how Black musicians have been exploited. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. This is KBOO. It's 9 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Winona LaDuke, speaking Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the EMU Ballroom at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Winona LaDuke will speak on nature's historic position as property and the international call to legally recognize nature's right to exist, persist, and naturally evolve. This global movement is dedicated to normalizing the notion of rights of nature. Again, that's Winona LaDuke speaking on the rights of nature Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the EMU Ballroom on the corner of 19th Avenue and University Street in Eugene. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996.